If you have not changed the way that you buy meat yet, you should make the switch to Good Ranchers today. When you subscribe, Good Ranchers will give you 1.5 pounds of free bacon in every box for a year. That's a $240 value. And this bacon tastes so good because Good Ranchers pigs are never crated and they never use antibiotics or added hormones. And they have heritage breeds that have historically produced the best pork in the world. Subscribe today and get their price lock guarantee. What you pay today will be what you pay a year from now. With Good Ranchers, I consistently get the same quantity and quality of meat every single time. Their all-natural burgers, USDA prime steaks, and better-than-organic chicken have changed my standard for great meat, and it will change yours too. Visit GoodRanchers.com and use code Dana for $20 off your next box. Get free bacon, great meat, a secure price, and a bonus of $20 off today at GoodRanchers.com with code Dana when you subscribe. GoodRanchers.com, code Dana. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.
When you have people coming across our southern border in these numbers, even with the additional resources we have now, it's simply not feasible to keep track of them all. And the backlog in cases just grows and grows and grows. And communities along the southern border are forced to absorb these large numbers. And then it becomes, as you know, a political stunt by the governor of Texas, governor of Florida.
And he's resuming sending people.
A stunt, he says. That seems to be what the people who don't actually have. It doesn't seem like a stunt to people in McAllen, Texas. I can tell you that. It sure as hell doesn't seem like a stunt to people in El Paso. It sure as hell doesn't seem like a stunt to any of these border towns, any of these border towns in any of these border states. And it sure as hell doesn't seem like a stunt to the people victimized by illegal immigration constantly. I mean, we had this story earlier this week. We were talking about it. Welcome to the show. Your hostess, your curmudgeon, your perpetual curmudgeon here, Dana Lash, with you. And as always, pleased to be with you. A lot of stuff to hit as we start off this program today. And this, I got a lot, there's a lot of actual, a lot of stories. And I have to apologize too for the prep email going out to our subscribers at Chapter and Verse a little later today. You still got it before the show. Apparently there was a little hiccup in the sending for Substack because it said, it told me it was scheduled. And then it said, dismiss, your post is scheduled. I'm like, yay, okay. And then, no, it wasn't. It wasn't at all. So anyway, we're getting it remedied. All right, so first off, again, welcome to the show. You can listen across the country. You can stream the show. You can watch the simulcast of the show also, on 347 DirecTV, YouTube, Facebook, and then, of course, Chapter and Verse is the Substack. Okay, so let's just get right into it because there's quite a lot to hit. We've got... Let me give you the four big areas that I'm looking... Actually, I lied. Five big areas that I'm looking at today. And there's a lot of information. And I have like maybe an eighth of it on my rundown. So we have the ongoing stuff with the Supreme Court, right? The attacks on Clarence Thomas. And then an actual case of I could almost kind of be persuaded both ways. An actual case, you could say, of recusal for Sotomayor. We're going to get into that. We have the latest with immigration because we're now 7 days away from Title 42. And this deluge that's going to be at the southern border. And I literally don't know how they're going to deal with it. I really don't know. So we have that issue. We have the ongoing issue of wokery as well. I have a number of things that play into this because I think this is, again, one of those pillars of trying to undermine unity in the nation, et cetera. So we're going to touch on that as well. And then we have, actually, I said five, right? I have five things. Then we have the debt ceiling, the ongoing battle over the debt ceiling. And then we have this situation of law and order. And I had a big piece that came out about this morning that I was working on last night about Jordan Neely, the guy who was in the chokehold on the subway in Manhattan. And we're actually going to have Tim Kennedy on a little bit later because he's an expert in this chokehold. It's a rear naked choke. It's a blood choke. And we're going to talk to him about that. And the reason why I specifically want to focus on that aspect of the story, and we're going to get into all of it, is because I think, first off, this happened in Manhattan. So the DA there is Alvin Bragg, and I just would be shocked if Alvin Bragg didn't bring charges. If anything, some kind of like negligent homicide or something like that, maybe a manslaughter charge against this guy. And the reason that I think that there might be an opening for that, and I'm being very clinical, I think the guy was defending himself. Honestly, I think he was defending other passengers. If you read my piece, you're going to understand my perspective. But to explain to you what the reasoning Bragg and his acolytes are probably going to use, they're probably going to say, oh, well, he did that rear naked choke too long or something to that effect. So I wanted to talk to Tim Kennedy about it, who's literally an expert in this because, I mean, he's, you know, MMA champion. He's, you know, active duty military. And I want him to explain the mechanics of it because being that probably most of us have never put anyone in a rear naked choke. I mean, you know, you got questions like, okay, because it's supposed to put them to sleep, so to speak, supposed to knock them out. Okay, well, are there any other like conditions that could take place that might expedite fatality in that? I mean, I get there's a lot of stuff to discuss. Like, did the guy have a coronary? I know the medical examiner came back and said that he had that the cause of death was that compression. Do you believe any? I don't believe anybody. I want to get into the mechanics of it. So we're going to talk to him about that here and later on in the program. And so we got a lot of stuff to hit, as you can understand. So we started off with Jay Johnson here talking about the border. And there are some Democrats that are coming out and explaining how this is going to be really problematic for the administration. It's going to be problematic because when you have a total breakdown at the border, it's going to reflect so poorly upon Democrats. And they're all worried about that going up. It's not because they're worried about the people across the border or people in border towns. They're worried about the optics. That's what they're worried about. And so this problem from the Biden administration, I saw our friend Larry, by the way, who's going to be having a birthday. Happy birthday, Larry, our listener from Las Vegas. He's going to the Bahamas. I'm going to try not to be jealous and spiteful. But he had noted that the president's calling a litigant pretty early and he's going to have a nice long weekend right in Delaware. Isn't that what it is? He's having a super nice long weekend in Delaware. Must be nice. While all of this is happening at the border, the deluge. I mean, he also could be working with Kevin McCarthy. Now, on the debt ceiling aspect, I think there's a reason why they won't let him in a room with Kevin McCarthy. I think they're trying to hide the fact that he's like senile. Yeah. But we're going to talk about that with the issue of the border. I don't even know why we're playing around with having any kind of debt ceiling or any kind of budget proposal at all whatsoever, because it's goofy at this point. It's goofy because why would you do that when you have a completely open border? Why? So we'll see how all those negotiations pan out. Now, as for the other Biden situation, so apparently the walls are closing in on Biden and his family. At least that's what some of the headlines are. That's what they're saying. There was this FBI tip about Biden that was at the center of this, according to the New York Post, that was at the center of this scheme, right? And that's that's bringing on a lot of investigations here. It's invoking a lot of investigations. And so, by the way, New York Post, can you stop your stupid pop-up ads? I want to punch your web editors in their face. I literally want to strangle you all. This isn't 1998. For the love of all things holy, can you please put down the stupid, you know, late 90s GeoCity type of coding with your stupid pop-up ads, or I'm going to drag you across Fifth Avenue and kick your ass. Stop it. Oh my gosh, I can't stand this. I hate this. Nobody cares about these ads. When I see your pop-up ad, I want to burn your headquarters down. I don't want to buy your product. I have like a visceral reaction to the opposite. So this whistleblower tip, to my point, that puts Biden like right smack, you know, the big guy, right smack in the middle of this bribery scheme. Everybody's been looking over all of his interactions with all of these overseas business associates. He's had everybody, like his sister, his brother. How many other like family members? Everybody is involved in this. I'm going through my Rolodex of Biden's. Uncles, cousins, baby mamas. Baby, who knows, except for that one in Arkansas. Right. So the House Oversight, James Comer was revealing this whistleblower information yesterday. So they told Biden's the FBI, they said, look, you got a deadline of May 10th. You got to get us some documents. You need to get us some stuff because the tip involves this whistleblower information. They said that there was this criminal scheme that involves Biden and a foreign national, and it deals with the exchange of money for policy decisions. That's pretty damning. And they're going through the proper whistleblower route, which signals to me it's not somebody who's just running to the press saying, I have something. No, they actually went through the proper protocol so that they could be protected under whistleblower protections. That signifies to me that there's something serious here. So, I am not surprised. Are you? Because I'm not. No. So they're demanding the FBI record on this criminal scheme. They're saying we want all anything on this. They said that they issued a subpoena after, quote, legally protected disclosures to Grassley's office. And they said that they believe the FBI possesses an unclassified internal document that includes very serious detailed allegations that implicates the current POTUS, and they want to know what the FBI has done to verify any of this or investigate on any of this. They said that the FBI, and they're correct on this, they have a history of botching everything, botching all of these politically charged investigations. So we want to see what you got. That's what Grassley said in the statement. I totally agree. Put it all out there. Get it all out. We have a right to know. And apparently there are, and I've heard this from others, Jim Jordan had intimated such. But Comer says, yes, there are more whistleblowers that are going to come forward in this. Now, two thoughts. Yes, it's totally deserved. Totally deserved. Number one. Number two, dude, this is Democrats going after him. These are Democrats that are leaking on him. So then you got to think, okay, if they leak on him, who are they going to try to get in his place? If they're going to try to sabotage his campaign, who are they going to get in his place? They got somebody. Who do they have in his... It's weird because there's no Democrat establishment. The whole party's establishment. You know, even Bernie Sanders, he's literally part of the establishment. He's like been in there. He's a barnacle on the USS America. I mean, he's been there for forever. So there, it's the Democrat establishment fighting the Democrat establishment. Fascinating. Did you know there's a trans poetry month, apparently? What? I don't know. I saw this trending last night. Yeah, why, I'm like, why the hell do you get a whole month? You get a whole month for poetry because based on how you have sex. By the way, don't look at the hashtags on social media because the poems there are hysterical. They're so funny. So apparently it's I don't know. I guess it's National Poetry Month, but they're trying to say it's Trans Poetry Month. I don't know. I don't even know what half of the descriptions are. Like the Indigenous Two Spirit, that sounds like a, you know, literally like a Starbucks order. You don't have to be a human Starbucks order. You know what I'm saying? Yes, I'd like the Indigenous Two Spirit, queer, trans, bi, you know, whatever, lateral, whatever, unicorn, etc. You don't have to be that. Yeah, so there's some wokery for you. No, I didn't read any of it. Most of it I hate. I didn't read any of it. The stuff that was kind of having fun with it on Twitter was good enough. That was good enough. When we come back, because we got headlines on the way, I have this piece, like I said, ran it this morning on the left's new cause célèbre. That's Jordan Neely. This is the 30-year-old who is pictured in video and photo, which, you know, if you see the video, you got to have a warning on that because, I mean, he's in a chokehold. But this 30-year-old man, he was put in a chokehold on a New York City subway because he apparently was scaring the hell out of all of the passengers. Now, local press has been doing a fairly good job of giving you the context in which, you know, really that is incredibly important in this. The guy has a violent history. He's tried to push people onto train tracks before. He's assaulted people. And so he apparently was making enough people uneasy that that some strangers stepped forward, and one of them tried to subdue him with a rear naked choke because apparently he was getting violent. And he ended up passing out and they couldn't revive him. So he is dead. And you have everyone from AOC to all these other leftists going out there saying that, oh, here's another. It's George Floyd 2.0. It's not. And we're going to talk about this here coming up.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So I just have this listed on my Quick Five under, do these people want to be murdered? Here's why. Here's the headline. It's over at Esquire. It says, is it time to quit coffee for good? What? Uh-huh. A growing chorus of concerned former addicts are trying to wake people up to caffeine's negative effects. You want to know the negative effect of not having caffeine? You could get murdered. They're fine with needles and feces all over the streets in urban areas, but oh my gosh, caffeine? Shut up. Just stop it. By the way, you realize that you can, you know, moderate. Like, I have a cup, maybe two cups sometimes, a day of coffee. My Black Rifle coffee, which you can use code Dana. I'm just saying. All right, so doctor, this is wild. Doctors performed the world's first brain surgery on a baby with a deadly genetic disorder while it was still in the womb. The baby was in his mom's belly. And so they actually performed surgery. This gives me, I don't get anxiety. This gives me anxiety to even look at the story. I was like, oh my gosh. You have to, I was bad at the game Operation. Like, I can't even imagine this. This terrifies me. So it was successful. So that's you know, pretty awesome. Let's see. Oh man, a former homeless hero. Did you guys see this video of this, the baby's great aunt? This baby was getting pulled out of the car by their great aunt, put in a stroller. The great aunt fell and literally fell on her face, lost grip of the stroller, which then rolled towards a 4-lane highway. And hero Ron Nessman, who had just left a job interview at Applebee's, saw what was happening, ran towards the stroller, and saved this baby's life. And it's all on camera. God bless Ron Nessman. And I hope he gets that job at Applebee's. Applebee's, you better be hiring Ron. You better be hiring this hero. Good on Ron Nessman, a former homeless man, got his life turned around. He's getting a job at Applebee's. Man, I want him as my server. I'm going to go to that Applebee's. Peter Thiel is apparently going to support Ron DeSantis if he decides to run and become the nominee. Interesting. We have a lot more on the way. The Jordan Neely case. Stay with us. Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
Well, both the Congresswoman and the Comptroller, the Comptroller is a citywide leader. And I don't think that's very responsible at the time where we're still investigating the situation. Let's let the DA conduct his investigation with the law enforcement officials. To really interfere with that is not the right thing to do. And I'm going to be responsible and allow them to do their job and allow them to determine exactly what happened here.
That's Mayor Eric Adams of New York City. And I disagree with him on a lot of stuff. And I think he says some stupid things often. This isn't one of them, though. I do agree with him on that. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. It's starting to gain momentum, and I wrote about this. I mentioned it. I tweeted about it last night. There was a piece that came out on Chapter and Verse. If you subscribe, it's almost riot season. The left's new cause celeb, and that was, of course, discussing this Jordan Neely case. So, if you're unfamiliar with this case, you're going to start hearing a lot about it, and you might have already seen some of the clips. A 30-year-old man named Jordan Neely was on the subway, and he was put into a chokehold by a 24-year-old Marine. Now, that headline alone sounds horrible, right? It sounds, oh my gosh, it sounds like he was targeted and murdered. But that's not the case. This was on Monday, around 2:30 p.m. on Monday, said police. And, you know, people show the video without context, and they make it sound like it's George Floyd 2.0. In fact, the NAACP has already weighed in. BLM is already there. They want this Marine charged with murder. They said he was, I mean, if you read like Touré and some of these other people, MSNBC, CNN, they said that, oh my gosh, they act like this Marine just saw this black guy on the subway and wanted to kill him. Hold him accountable, they're demanding. He killed just this innocent, fun-loving Michael Jackson impersonator. Is that the full context, though? Because you can be sad that Jordan Neely died, that he died the way that he did, without ignoring the fact that he also represented a credible threat to public safety. I mean, enough so that strangers felt compelled to step in. It wasn't just the Marine. The Marine got him in a chokehold. There were other people working to subdue this Neely guy. He had a history of being more than just a menace on the subway. AOC said, oh, he was just home. He was homeless and he was crying for food. Literally, that's what she said. And the murderer gets protected. Murderer. Now, by the way, Juan has some of the footage if you watch the simulcast. So just a warning on that from the subway. Neely had, like I said, he had a history of being more than just a menace on the subway. This guy had 44 prior arrests for offenses that included assault. And speaking of assault, he had a warrant out for his arrest at the time for felony assault. He had apparently, he was apparently threatening other passengers. And he had tried previously, and this is all documented, tried pushing people onto the subway tracks. And he had viciously punched a 67-year-old woman in the face. This is all recent. He was described as a subway recidivist, ABC 7 New York. 44 prior arrests, including assault, disorderly conduct, and he was actively being sought for questioning, and this was the felony assault warrant. His criminal record started in 2013 with petty crimes in the subway, but they said they got more serious over the years. So this is why it isn't irrational to think that he finally may have scared someone into thinking that they had to defend themselves by using force, which is also sad. It is sad that anyone was put in that position. It is sad that you can't even ride the subway without living in fear that you could be stabbed. No, by the way, where was all? Let me pull this up. Speaking of that, I have a story here of a gentleman who was killed in one of these situations. He was stabbed by a homeless person, much in a situation like this. I'm going to find this story. It's completely rational to think that, you know, finally, he may have scared someone into thinking that they had to use force to defend themselves and other people. And no one has a thought to spare for the people who, you know, it's sad that anyone was even put in this position in the first place. That's also sad. But like I said, he had a record. Unsafe Streets US had the story of Tommy Bailey, a family man who worked as a union steam fitter, father of three children. He saw a homeless man harassing a New York police officer, told the man to stop. The homeless man, who had a history of violence, stabbed Bailey in the neck and killed him. There was nothing from these same politicians. AOC wasn't out here. No one called it a lynching. No one was talking about black men always getting stabbed. None of that. But in this case, because it was a white Marine, that's immediately the narrative that was used. And it's sad that he died this way, and it's sad that he put people in the position to think that they had to use force to protect themselves and others. That's why I said it's not irrational to think that he finally may have scared someone. He had a violent history. Now, the local press has been very good about including this aspect of the story. The national press has predictably omitted it in favor of this George Floyd 2.0 narrative. Now, I said in my piece, there are several issues at play here. Neely had a long history of terrorizing passengers. Whether it's from police reports or eyewitness accounts, his unchecked hostility created this ticking time bomb situation. I mean, every report said that his behavior was getting worse and worse, more and more violent. At some point, someone was going to believe that there existed a credible threat to their safety and they were going to have to defend themselves. Second thing, this is the post-George Floyd era. To assume that the individual, the Marine, put Neely in a chokehold because he was motivated by race is only possible if you view the world through that same lens of racial prejudice that you oppose. That the fact that multiple other passengers acted to assist in subduing Neely suggests that the Marine was not the only one who viewed Neely as a dangerous threat. The left, if they're so capable of immediately assuming the best of Neely and the worst of the guy who engaged him, why do they not also imagine the fear from the other passengers and the witness described situation as being so tense that strangers felt compelled to intervene? Here's the other thing. Why does the left and the national press immediately give benefit of the doubt to a violent repeat offender and not the Marine with zero record except for one of service to his country? Three. As I said, Neely had a very long history of terrorizing passengers of all ethnicities. And Democrats like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they want you to ignore this. She tweeted, quote, Jordan Neely was murdered, but because Jordan was houseless and crying for food in a time when the city is raising rents and stripping services to militarize itself while many in power demonize the poor, the murderer gets protected with passive headlines plus no charges. It's disgusting. That's a pretty heavy accusation from a sitting member of Congress to call someone a murderer. She wants you to ignore all of the context that I gave you and focus on class warfare. Neely was homeless, which is apparently a situation that affords someone the right to threaten and assault people without expectation of penalty. Or on Neely's, they want you to focus on Neely's Michael Jackson impersonation videos. Like that's, you know, there's nothing else. That's all he was right here. Just a harmless Michael Jackson impersonator. They want to promote the narrative that Neely was murdered for being poor and black. That's why they focus on this and they ignore his record. They ignore, like on the video, you can hear the guy screaming threats. Of course, you know, AOC also once said that people were looting in New York City for bread. They were going to like, you know, Foot Locker for bread. I don't know who she thinks is the demonized party here, but I'm inclined to think that it might be the people that Neely was terrorizing over the years. Like the 67-year-old woman who was punched in the face of the people he tried to push on those subway tracks. I'm inclined to think that those were the people who were demonized. I'm inclined to think that the people who felt that physical force was necessary to subdue him were the ones who were demonized. And she rushes, without any context, to present this picture of a guy victimized by everyone and everything other than perhaps himself. New York City has an over $1 billion annual budget for mental health. And they have little to show for the previous efforts. Remember the Bill de Blasio thing? The Thrive New York City? Remember how his wife just made $1 billion just vanish in thin air? Where'd that money go? No, New York City has $1 billion-plus mental health budget that feeds people through the system, but it doesn't address the root issues. It doesn't address the breakdown of the family. It doesn't address the breakdown of the community. It doesn't address the breakdown of local support systems. These are localized networks that historically have been relied upon to be the first line of defense, to identify when loved ones have problems, to aid loved ones with mental health struggles. But in our republic that we have now, in this social contract, the state should be the last ditch. But Democrats treat it as the first and only resource. That's the real victimization. Bad policy that has destroyed pillars of a successful community. Bad policy that has destroyed the family, that has destroyed places of worship, that has destroyed neighborly kinship, and replaced them with this synthetic, if you want to call it that, support structure that doesn't do anything but create and encourage an over-reliance on government. We have more to come because the medical examiner has ruled the death a homicide, but that doesn't mean it's going to be prosecuted as such. But there's a good chance that it may be, because this is Alvin Bragg's district. And you remember Alvin Bragg? How many people just in the past year has he tried to go after for legitimately and legally using their protected and affirmed right of self-defense against someone who was presented an actual immediate threat to their lives? We're going to talk about that coming up, because it could come down to examination of the chokehold that was used by the Marine in question. Later on, we're going to talk to our friend Tim Kennedy about that. As colleges and universities across the country hold their graduations, I'd like to highlight a place where students receive the best classical liberal arts education in America. And when these students graduate, they've studied the great books, the history of Western civilization and of America, and the meaning and history of the Constitution. Can you guess who I'm talking about? I'm talking about Hillsdale College. Hillsdale was founded in 1844 to offer the kind of education needed to preserve civil and religious liberty, and holds true to that mission while refusing to accept one penny of taxpayer funding, not even indirectly, in the form of student grants and loans. Hillsdale students also abide by an honor code, which ensures a unity of purpose and fosters lively, civil, and intelligent debate. See for yourself and learn from Hillsdale for free through their influential Speech Digest in Primus, and by taking online courses on American history, the Constitution, and other subjects. Find out more at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4hillsdale.com. Join the battle over education for our country's future today.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
I want to be very mindful. I hear your questions about vaccines. I want the American people to know that the COVID vaccines remain highly effective to reduce the risk of serious illness, hospitalization.
Mm-hmm. The injections are effective at what?
I don't believe you.
Effective at what? Doing nothing? Are they effective at not preventing transmission? Yes, that's right. That's what I meant. They're effective at not preventing transmission.
And
yes.
Myocarditis. They're effective with that.
If you're trying to, there's a reason it's called the clot shot. I mean, right. If you're just... Look, first off, welcome back to the show. They don't, actually. I mean, if you want to believe that they do, I'm not going to razz you about it, but it... They literally admitted that it didn't prevent transmission. We didn't come up with that on our own, did we, Kane? That was literally the CDC that admitted it.
Yeah.
That was that. What was her face? The Rochelle Walensky lady. She admitted it on video with her own mouth, exerting the air through her vocal cords to say the words that they did not prevent transmission of the virus. So we didn't do that. They said it. The people... who said that at first it was effective, then they said, well, not psych. Nope, it's not really. Why does she go out there and still say it's effective at what? That doesn't make any sense. And then they're like, oh, wait, there's a variant now. We haven't done anything to change this injection, but you got to go get it again to help with a variant. I mean, forget the fact that science says you got to kind of alter this stuff and you got to pattern it after the genome sequencing of the variant. But, it takes too long for us to have done it in this amount of time. So just get the shot again. Oh, my gosh. The worst thing is seeing people on social media. I went and got my shot today. Ma, ma, ma. I don't care. Right. Nobody cares. I went to the dentist. Ma. Nobody cares. At least the dentist works. Can't stand it. Really? Oh my gosh, I just can't. It's no. I mean, the people were mad at each other. I had people mad at me, like people I know. can't believe you're not getting the shot. I had it, you blockhead. I had the virus.
Right. How does science work? I don't know. What do you mean? Do you mean you have natural immunity now? Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's a thing.
I mean, golly, these people. I thought they were supposed to be open-minded, but the left are a bunch of flat earthy neo-Puritans. I've said this forever. All right, coming up in our second hour. The medical examiner has ruled Jordan Eadley's death a homicide, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be prosecuted or pursued as such. We're going to discuss this here coming up. And Bud Light, oh, they're getting it bad. Still, stay with us. When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
And to me, this is the key learning. So moving forward, I agree with you. One challenge is what you call the misinformation and confusion that still exists. We need to continue to clarify the facts that this was one cam, one influencer, one post, and not a campaign.
Oh.
And repeat this message for some time.
Work?
But as we do that...
All right, so this is the CEO, Michael Dukakis, of Anheuser-Busch, who is addressing on a phone call with investors this whole Bud Light thing. Welcome back to the program. Dana Loesch with you. Top of the second hour this Thursday. Okay, so I feel like he doesn't understand how social media campaigns work. It's a campaign. You can say that it's not, but it is, because that's the whole point of social media outreach and marketing, is that it takes everything that you would normally do with traditional media, and it distills it down to one post, to one thing. That's, you know, yeah, as Kane said, that's why he's the CEO and not the marketing guy. That's the whole purpose of the social media influencers. It doesn't matter if it's one thing. That's a campaign, because it's about the way in which the influencer uses it. It doesn't matter if you just did one thing. They could still do things repeatedly. It lives on their, you know, their social media homes, and they become associated with it. And it's that earned media revenue. So, yes, it is a campaign. I mean, somebody explain to this dude how all of this works. So the story now is that Anheuser-Busch, they've completely disavowed Bud Light sponsorship of this. And they've sent this letter to retailers. They're flipping out. It's kind of rough. The sales, everything is down. All the sales are down. Bud Light's down over 26% now. Crazy. Miller Lite and Coors Light are up almost 14%. They still are just not acknowledging. They're trying to give out beer. Right? They're giving away free beer. The CEO said Anheuser-Busch is providing direct and financial support to the frontline workers impacted by the boycott. They're naming delivery drivers, sales representatives, wholesalers, bar owners, and servers. Dukakis said that the brewing giant's going to triple media spending on advertising for Bud Light over the summer. They're going to try to plan a major marketing push to recover its brand. Dudes, call a sister up, okay? First off, it shouldn't be this hard. You people are stupid. These people, the Bud Light people, are stupid. This is so dumb. You got a bunch of marketing vultures there like, we'll help you. You don't need to be doing that. You just need to affirm some basic things. And then you're pretty much set. You know what Bud Light could do that would be just absolutely balls to the wall amazing? You know what they could do? Here's my ad. You have everybody coming together for, like, I don't know, pick something, like a baseball game, a summer concert, and it shows people just like entering, you know, either the stadium or the fairgrounds, wherever. And they go up and they wait in line and they get a Bud Light and they toast. And it could be everybody from like 80s pinups to like macho dudes, to the Kitty Demure, the dude who's a drag queen and goes on Jesse Waters' show and then is always and completely is like, yes, this is a sex show. Kids shouldn't be at it. Female athletes like Riley Gaines, you know, male athletes. You could even have Brewster or Caitlyn. He calls himself Caitlyn. Changed his name legally, so I'll call him that. The Caitlyn Jenner in it. And then everybody kind of, but it still respects the boundaries. It doesn't erase women, and it doesn't make a mockery of women by having a guy who literally just was like, there's a girlhood. If I had a chick friend who acted like him, I would send her, I would bake her act her. It's crazy. No girl acts like that. It is offensive. It is a caricature. It, as people have been saying for months now, and I think Tyrese is the first person to coin this, it's woman face. You respect the boundaries and you respect the uniqueness without erasing anybody. You do that ad, everybody toasts, boom, you're done. I think that's a good idea, right? Absolutely. That's a good idea. You get a Tawny Katane-like person in there, like Baywatch suit. You get like, you know, the guys who used to work out at the beach in California. Get those dudes in there. Get everybody in there. And you're acknowledging the differences and celebrating the unity. That's your ad. You're welcome. I don't know why they got to do all this. Now, guys, let's make a Rube Goldberg machine out of solving this problem. It's a simple solve. It is killing my soul that they don't realize how easy this is to solve this. Oh, my gosh. It is like watching a big baby sitting on the floor, not a big gay baby, but an actual big baby sitting in the floor with a shape sorter. And they've got the round piece and they're trying to get it into the square hole and it's not happening, but they will not give up and they will not look at any other opening. I can't. It's just like that. It's like watching it. It would be so easy. I don't know why they're not doing this. So they have this guy on the con. He's like, oh, it's just one thing. Quit making excuses. You messed up, dude. And at the end of that ad, by the way, if you had Duke Riss go out there and he could just say, yeah, we poop up and then toast everybody. There you go, right there. You know what? People in America are forgiving. And people in America, one of the aspects of American culture that you don't really see anywhere else is the comeback story. Everybody loves a comeback story. They love a comeback story. Even though I think a big part of our society pretends we hate redemption, we actually don't. We like to see it. We like to see a character reverse their arc. We like to see that kind of stuff. You know, nobody's rooting for someone else's downfall. And I'm going to tell you something. This isn't, and I had a friend of mine make this point, this isn't just about conservative whatever either. I don't know what these companies don't realize. I think, you know, some of what this power is. It's not just like a conservative thing. I mean, this is Americans reacting. I mean, you had, what was the video that you were sharing with me, Kane? It was Fenway Park?
Yeah.
Yesterday at Fenway Park.
And how, I mean, it's packed and people are standing in line to get beer, except for, they're not standing in line where? At the Bud Light counter. Right. And the people there at the Bud Light counter, it's like just you hear crickets. That's all you hear.
It's a Red Sox game. This is packed. And you see in the video towards the end as they walk out into towards the field, and you see the entire stadium packed, yet the Bud Light line mm-hmm. completely empty. And the guy standing behind the counter is literally leaning with his arms crossed because he has nothing to do.
I mean, this is not hard, guys. It's beer. It's really hard to mess up selling beer. I mean, all you literally have to do is go, here, it's beer. And there's your ad. It's really hard to mess that up, right? They did, though, because they had this stupid marketing broad. And this is such an easy fix. Why are they making this into a big thing? Oh, my gosh, I can't complain about this enough. Now that's making me almost as mad as them having that woman face cosplayer sit here and talk about a drink that they never literally consume. Because you know they don't. I mean, come on. They don't drink no Bud Light. Come on, be real. It's not even a thing.
Do you really believe there are so many just conservatives that drink beer that it caused this much problem with Bud Light?
Yeah, that's my that's the other point.
I mean, unreal.
This is not a conservative thing. This is an American reaction to stupidity. Yep. That's what this is. It's not a right-wing mob. It's not any of that. These are people who are like, wow, this is really stupid. We're not doing this. We're not doing this. And they just, I mean, you don't see sales that drop like this because it's just conservatives. People get aggravated with it. I'll never forget the Chick-fil-A thing. There were people out there who were not even Republicans, who were mad at the way that this was being presented. You know, Chick-fil-A never, you know, they never did anything. They never were mean, but the way in which they were treated actually made independents and more classical liberals go, oh, wow, okay, well, we're going to go to get a sandwich. This is ridiculous. That's what this is. Okay, so I gotta hit on this too. I don't know if I do. I have this in this section since we're talking about cultural stuff, and I have more wokery, but I really got to get into this. So where's my post? It was a tweet. I don't even think I have it on here. So, you know, yesterday we had the story about how Dee Snider had remarked on Paul Stanley's tweet where he was questioning hormone abuse and sex changes and surgeries for minor children, right? And Dee Snider had affirmed that and agreed with him. I didn't even read this Rolling Stone piece, but here's the tweet. Quote, Dee Snider's planned performance at a San Francisco Pride in June has been called off after the Twisted Sister singer voiced his support for Paul Stanley's transphobic tweet.
Transphobic?
I tweeted, oh, shut up, you boomer rag. And then I added in parentheses after, no offense to boomers like my mom. I mean, come on, guys. That's a joke. Let's not, like, be, like, totally. I hate, like, everything literal and nothing can be funny. Seriously. Like, how, Gen X is the butt of every joke. Stop. This has nothing to do with transphobia. We can't cut your kid's schlong off. You're transphobic. What? It's true. When you voice concern that maybe, just maybe, you might give a kid a serious health condition later on down the road because you're jacking them full of hormones and you have zero idea, nor are there any studies at all whatsoever showing the long-term effects of this, and you're calling people who are voicing concern transphobic, everything has lost all meaning. You're womanphobic then, if you disagree with me. You're womanphobic. You're half white, half Hispanic phobic if you disagree with Kane. You're Puerto Rican phobic if you disagree with Juan. You're millennial phobic if you disagree with Steve. See, we can do this all day. You know what I mean? Like, we can totally do this all day long.
All you phobes.
All you phobes. Daily phobes. We should have that. That should be a segment. I'm mentally marking this. Phobe is a funny word. So, I don't... First off, I hate Rolling Stone with the burning passion of 1,000 suns. And I'm not even going to get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees because I will lose it and destroy this studio. So we're going to just tiptoe past that bomb. But them making a big deal out of this, Dee Snider, making a big deal out of Dee Snider. Dee Snider is the biggest A double snake hole that you can ever imagine. And he doesn't care. He literally just doesn't care. I don't even agree with him on everything. And I thought he was a jackwagon over the vaccine stuff. But, you know, whatever. Live and let live. But this and Rolling Stone, like, he's transphobic. You're Dee Snider phobic. How about that?
Yeah.
This isn't about being... Do people understand what phobia is? Do they have dictionaries at Rolling Stone?
Fear.
No one's afraid. They're concerned. You're telling me that you have no issue? First off, it's established. There's no long-term study about the detrimental effects of hormone abuse, right? Like, I'll tell you this. As a woman, when I get older, at some point, I'm going to be going through menopause. As a woman. Women do that. As we age, we do that. I am absolutely terrified of that prospect. Because we grow up hearing all these stories of our moms having to do all this hormone stuff and all the problems that it caused with these women. I can't even imagine what that is like with kids when you're pumping them full of unnecessary hormones. And you have no idea how it's going to affect them later on in life. The only thing that we have to go on are like the women who have gone through menopause and they've been dealing with this. And they have like issues because of, you know, hormone stuff, etc. Oh my gosh. It is terrifying to think what that's going to do in children who are like 8 and 9 years old. And if you say that you're not concerned about this, you're a monster. You are an absolute rat bastard monster. To say that you're not concerned about this, the hell is wrong with you? It is that is child abuse. That is not informed consent. And to express concern over that, sorry that we care about kids more than you do, apparently.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So, an anthropologist had her account suspended. She's an anthropology professor because she had a photo holding a skull of some sort of like historical significance in a tweet explaining it. And it was literally classified as, quote, graphic violence or adult content and locked. What? So they're trying to get Elon Musk. I hope that was a mistake, but it's one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. Like, come on. This is why you can't have algorithms do everything for you. So dumb. This is fascinating. An Iowa woman got 1 year in jail plus probation for doing exactly what Hunter Biden has done. Lied on a 4473. A 27-year-old woman from Iowa was sentenced last week to serve 1 year and a day in federal prison. She said she pled guilty to making a false statement during the purchase of several firearms. She lied about her drug use on her 4473. Huh. Lied about it. Just like that. All right, so coming up, the Jordan Neely case. This is growing. You're going to hear more about this. Tim Kennedy is going to join next to explain chokeholds. Stay with us.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, both the Congresswoman and the Comptroller, the Comptroller is a citywide leader. And I don't think that's very responsible at the time where we're still investigating the situation. Let's let the DA conduct his investigation with the law enforcement officials. To really interfere with that is not the right thing to do. And I'm going to be responsible and allow them to do their job and allow them to determine exactly what happened here.
Now, that's New York City Mayor Eric Adams. I don't agree with him on a lot of stuff, as we've established, but he's right here. I don't think that the Manhattan DA is going to go along with this, though, because that guy is Alvin Bragg. And we've seen that Alvin Bragg necessarily does not hold self-defense in very high esteem. Of course, we're talking about this case of Jordan Neely. Welcome back to the program. You can listen to the radio show across the country in a market near you. You can stream it on every device. You can watch the simulcast, YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. We were showing you some. Now, I will warn you, there might be some side-by-side of in the simulcast of some of the footage from the New York subway. Really quickly, to recap, the Jordan Neely, 30-year-old man, violent history. He had a warrant out for felony assault. He had a history of trying to push people into train tracks. He had 44 priors. The guy was violent. And at some point, you know, he was going to cause someone to make them feel as though there was an immediate danger to their personal safety. And it wasn't just this 24-year-old Marine who felt that way. Other people had stepped in as well, just to put that into context. So he used a chokehold on him. And now there's all this debate about chokeholds. And everyone is an MMA expert on Twitter. I mean, it is fascinating to see all these people. Suddenly, they're MMA experts. So we thought we'd actually talk to, like, an actual expert. Because, you know, we know what we know and we know what we don't. We're MMA fans and we enjoy the style of mixed martial arts. But, I've never put anybody in a chokehold, neither of you. Tim Kennedy has, though. Tim Kennedy is a champion himself, special forces operator, unapologetically American. And you can find him at Tim Kennedy MMA on Twitter, on social media. Tim, always so good to see you. Always appreciate what you do. Will you teach us, tell us what a rear naked choke is? And does it work quick? It seems like it could be dangerous. I've never put anybody in a rear naked choke. Tell us about this.
Yeah, it's a great choke. It's really efficient. It is really fast. You know, essentially your bicep is stopping the blood on one side of your carotid artery, and your radial bone is stopping the blood on the other side of your carotid artery. So you have two sides that's stopping blood going to the brain, which ultimately is what makes people go to sleep. If you squeeze or are not aligned straight, it can damage also your ability to breathe. So not only will it stop your ability to take breath, but it'll stop blood flow to your brain. Blood chokes are really, really fast. So, you know, if it's put on effectively and efficiently on somebody that doesn't know how to train, you know, maybe 5 to 10 seconds, that person could lose consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a lot going on here with this case, and it's really fast. Everybody rushing to judgment, especially from their perches of ignorance. You're 100% right, Dan. And the things that people are saying right now, it's comical how clueless a lot of the people are there. You know, they're using use of force policy from law enforcement agencies and trying to apply it to a civilian that's riding on a train that then feels threatened by this felon that is accosting people. So the evidence is not out. There's not enough of it yet. You know,
yeah.
Bragg being the DA there, man, this is not going to be a great case, though.
I know. And that's what makes me so worried about all of this. We're talking to our friend Tim Kennedy. And this, and I love that you brought up, you know, use of force from the law enforcement and trying to apply it to the civilian situation, because so many people like pretend like, oh, this is what I would do in this situation. You don't know what you would do. Only like people who like really train, like you would know what you would do because you train for it relentlessly. Most people don't do that. They have an idea of what they want to do, but they fall back to whatever their highest level of skill is. And most people don't have it. This guy, I mean, clearly he felt confident enough to defend himself. He also felt threatened enough. And that guy, what isn't shown in a lot of the national media when they show this video, while that guy was being subdued, he was still screaming threats out at all the passengers, like cussing at them, threatening their lives, all of this stuff. And it took all these other people to get involved to help get this guy down. So, which kind of tells me that, I don't know if he was on something or what, but I mean, the 24-year-old was having a bit of a difficult time just initially looking at this video, which is sad. The reason that we bring up the chokehold is because, you know, you just expressed with me, you know, Alvin Bragg, this is his district. He's not really friendly to self-defense, and he's going to look to try to see if this was excessive defense or not, which I think is really kind of hard to measure in this instance because there's so many variables, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, here in, you know, we're going about to have a sentencing hearing here in Austin for a man that, in my opinion, clearly used self-defense when a protester walked up to his window with an AK-47 yep. and stuck it in his window, you know, and he shot the guy with a rifle in his face. You know, when we have very dangerous district attorneys, and we've been seeing this, and I don't think people have been aware for a really long time how important getting out and voting for your DA is, because when you have these radical DAs, they are going to be enforcing their own agendas and not the, you know, because the law can be interpreted and it can be interpreted at a county level. And in this case, you know, if I was in that same situation and there is a guy that's accosting customers or people on a subway, and, you know, my family is with me, I'm not going to wait. You know, I'm not going to wait for it to get bad. I'm not going to wait for this guy to pull out a weapon. I'm not going to wait for him to start hitting somebody. You know, like speed, surprise, and violence of action. This is what you want to do. And of course, a Marine is going to do what he thinks is right. And I'm going to defer to the judgment at that time in that space where, you know, this young man felt threatened and he did what, you know, what is a very effective move. The rear naked choke is an effective move to subdue somebody. It is also a very, very safe move. You know, like right here on my training center, if we walk 50 feet that way, there's 50 guys out on the mats right now training. And I promise all of them know how to do a rear naked choke. You know, it's a choke that I wish was allowed in all law enforcement departments. It is a very, very effective, safe choke when done properly. You know, but there are a lot of things that we don't know. Like this guy's mental health, what drugs he was on, if he had any respiratory problems, right. You know, if he had a weapon, you know, like if this Marine, you don't know until you know. And so this guy is starting to attack and accost customers on transporters on the subway. And then you have to make a in the moment decision about, is the next thing coming out a knife? You know, you don't know.
Yeah.
And this, it takes a long time for you to kill somebody with a chokehold.
And to that point, I mean, you just hit on a story. I was pulling this up. There was a story just from what, a year ago, a guy who saw a homeless man attacking a New York City police officer. He intervened and he got stabbed in the neck. I mean, and
that's
it, right? Makes people hesitant. But also, you don't know if this guy had a knife or not. And what other recourse are people left with? I mean, this is New York City. It's impossible to get a gun. Can't be carrying on the subways. What are you supposed to do if a guy's threatening to kill you on the subway and has a history of violent behavior? He's known to everybody there. He's apparently in the same spot all the time. I mean, what recourse are you left with?
Yeah, and we don't know the history and context. 40-something priors. How many times has he been on the subway with the same commuters?
Felony assault, punched a 67-year-old in the face.
It's crazy, right? And like, who knows how many times, maybe even this Marine has seen this same guy on the same subway commuting at the same time and seen violent behaviors before and, knowing where this goes. Maybe he's even seen a few of the other felonies take place. And he's like, man, not today, not while I'm here. For evil to conquer, it takes good men to do nothing. But thank God there was a good man that was on that subway at that time with the other commuters. Yeah. And he's like, no, I'm going to stand up and stop you. Who knows how bad this could have gotten? But he's in a very dangerous position with a very radical DA. It's bluff, the bottom line up front, it's a very effective chokehold.
Right.
The guy looks like he's using it properly. And he's trying to subdue an aggressor for as long, defending himself and the other passengers on the train until real help got there.
Right.
So like.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I don't even think negligent homicide is attainable for Bragg here. I mean, it's just we're talking to our friend Tim Kennedy. I've watched you fight. I've watched, a number of different fights and a number of different moves, chokeholds. To me, it seems like they're. Were a million things that he could have done that could have been more immediately dangerous and more immediately lethal than what he did. Weigh in on that.
Oh yeah. On the spectrum of, when you start talking in self-defense, they could categorize the rear naked choke as lethal response. And, take the law enforcement vernacular of, use of force and just apply in self-defense. And if you're saying, okay, did this man feel threatened to protect himself? And then really what he does, regardless of what he does, should be totally fine. Now on the spectrum of we'll just say the Tim Kennedy violence spectrum. On the far, far left side, you have the rear naked choke, which is like a very controlled, nice way to make the lights go off. And then there's like, I'm going to pick up a brick and smash you in the face. The far, far left is the controlled, great, useful technique that is allowed in every single grappling competition. If you go and you have five-year-olds doing jiu-jitsu tournaments and they're allowed to do a rear naked choke, which they are, it's a totally legal move. At every single jiu-jitsu competition on the planet, it's as young as you can get kids to participate in jiu-jitsu, they're allowed to do that choke. That's how safe. And you can do it on, 80-year-olds that come to my classes here, learn how to do this technique and have this technique done to them. It's that safe. All the way to that Marine skull stomping that dude or curb stomping that guy after he leg sweeps him, or on that spectrum, it's like a one on the violence, Tim Kennedy violence spectrum. 10 is where I pretty much go to immediately. That guy was down at the one level. So I thought it was a lot of restraint using a very safe technique. Compared to, hey, let's go full Marine. And Marines are good Marine. I love the Marines. And I thought that this was a great demonstration of restraint to restrain somebody that was being violent.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim Kennedy, always appreciate you, my friend. Folks, you can follow him online on social media at Tim Kennedy MMA. And of course, your website really quickly, because I know all of your stuff is listed there.
Yeah, sheepdogresponse.com is where we train people how to do this stuff. We train law enforcement and we train civilians about how to protect themselves, regardless of if you live in New York City, you can't carry a gun. One, you should move, or two, vote for change. Make sure you make your situation one that you can protect yourself and your family.
Yeah, there you go. Tim Kennedy, thank you so much, Tim, for joining us. We appreciate
you. You're the best.
Thank you.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Sorry, a couple of headlines here. All right, so first up there, this is the Miami Herald, so this is a real story. A 911 call about a fight ends with a Florida cop separating two brawling goats. It's not as, I don't love this as much as I love yesterday's story about the guy who got pulled over because he was driving erratically due to arguing with his parrot. That was true. Two brawling goats ended up at a Florida jail after deputies were called literally an act two goats. After their fight spilled in a nearby yard, according to Putnam County Sheriff's Office, the scene played out on April 30th, just 60 miles south of Jacksonville. Police were alerted to a fight in progress, and they showed up, and it wasn't people, it was goats. The sheriff's office wrote, the suspects were pretty mad at one another. The fight escalated into the yards of nearby residences. They said both were hard-headed, but officers managed to separate, wrangle them, and bring them to the Putnam County Jail. A photo shows the goats still glaring angrily at each other as the police led them away on leashes.
Were they hard-headed? Were they hard-headed?
They were hard-headed.
Those goats?
I want to hear that 911 call. If they love us, they're going to release it.
Right.
If they love us, you're going to release that call. Oh my gosh. Oh, okay. All right, here we go. A former Dunkin' Donuts employee is, this headline is making me hurt because it's not a hole, W-H-O-L-E, a lot of trouble. It's a hole, H-O-L-E, on purpose. It's a pun. Former Dunkin' Donuts employee is in a whole lot of trouble after stealing dough from the register. Now, at first, when I read this story, I'm going to be real with you. I didn't even see the register part. And I was like, that you can eat the dough. And I immediately was like, that's a thing I can do.
What we call money.
Yeah, I know, but I was, you know, I was like, dough? Donuts? Food? I mean, just, so a former Coral Springs Dunkin' Donuts employee was arrested and charged with burglary after returning to a restaurant in full uniform, serving the customers, and then when asked to leave, took a little money from the cash register. The police responded to the threat, and they said that the store manager showed officers the surveillance footage of the suspect. His name is Maximo Rosario. I mean, with a name like that, like, I mean, you should be rising to greatness, not stealing from a cash register. Your name is Maximo, for crying out loud. But he's in his Dunkin' uniform, and it shows him, well, it shows literally he's on camera stealing. So he was booked. He's from Pompano Beach, and he was arrested, taken to jail. So that's, I mean, duh, there's cameras everywhere. And he didn't even look up, apparently, either. Let's see. I can't read this. Nope, not that one. This, yeah, I think I'm gonna, okay, we're gonna read this one. A Florida man was apparently, he got in trouble because he apparently, tried to grab someone's crotch, on a flight, which is not something that you are allowed to do. I can't read this because everybody's pop-up ads are, what did I tell you about pop-up ads? I want to blow up your company when I read a pop-up ad. Anyway, Florida man, 74 years old, was accused of grabbing a flight attendant by the crotch. I mean, I know that there's like, I don't know. I just think it's, and that I'm not going to, that's insane. It's true though. It's a true story. He ended up being cited. Let's see this. We had the B story the other day. There was a Florida woman. She's still fighting over custody of her potty-trained motorcycle-riding pet alligator. We'll have that tomorrow.
Potty-trained?
Yeah. I didn't know you could do that with the gator.
Good.
Really? Stay with us. Third hour on the way.
John, I've got a question about the House Oversight Committee subpoena that was issued yesterday. It's seeking an FBI document from 2020 that, quote, describes an alleged criminal scheme involving then Vice President Biden and a foreign national relating to the exchange of money for policy decisions. What's the White House's response to this serious corruption allegation?
I'm going to have to refer to the Justice Department on that. I have nothing for you on that today.
No, do you know what this is? What country this pertains to, or what policy decision?
I have nothing for you, sir. I'm going to have to refer you to the Justice Department, and I'm getting the hook.
No, you're not. You're running away.
Wow.
He acted like he's at the Apollo. And the Sandman was coming out with a hook. We know where you were. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Top of this third hour. That's John Kirby. He did not like being asked that question. I can't get over his face, though. Kane put in, he put in Slack the links to these videos. And every face Kirby makes is like he just had like the TARDIS Sour Patch Kid of his life.
Or he's constipated.
And then he does this with his mouth. He does. And if you don't know what this is, because you're listening to the radio show, not watching the simulcast of the nationally syndicated radio show, make a fist and then put your thumb between your forefinger and your bad finger. I don't know how else to say that. The Thumpkin song, that was always bad finger. Or tall man. I don't remember. Put it between the index finger and the tall man. And then that's what he was, it's a face he was making with his tongue. I don't know. Anyway, all right. Well, welcome back. Top of the third hour. They don't want to talk about that.
No, they don't.
There could be, I'm not getting super like excited about it yet, because I'm always disappointed whenever it has to do with government and whenever it's government bringing accountability. I'm just always disappointed. Now, this has to do with this bribery scandal. And I'm just saying, right now it looks like it's catching up with him. The New York Times had a piece out a week ago. And that was talking about him campaigning and his schedule and all of this stuff. And he's not addressing that. It's like almost like he's just limiting two ways. He's limiting any kind of exposure that he may have to the press in terms of answering any question about this, especially as it heats up. You're not even seeing the walkabout, like shouted questions anymore that KJP says count as like interviews, apparently. You're also not seeing him sitting down with Kevin McCarthy, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But all of this alleged criminal scheme, I'm telling you, none of this looks good for the administration. And I mean, they said that there may be charges brought. We'll see. I'm just, like I said, I'm not confident that could potentially happen. The other thing I was thinking about too, with all of this, and I was looking at some of the sound bites of like Biden's budget director coming out and saying that they need to pass this. You know, this wouldn't be an issue if they just went out and passed this. If they just, what did you say? You had that audio?
I have some.
Yeah. Listen to this.
Let me be very clear. Congress needs to do his job. Tomorrow, they could put a bill on the floor to make sure we don't default.
Or you this could maybe not spend. You could,
which is what Republicans are proposing.
I mean, that's literally what we've been proposing. Maybe don't spend a whole bunch. So here's what I'm speculating here. Have you noticed there have been no reports of Biden sitting down with McCarthy? I mean, it is weird, right? He hasn't sat down with him at all to discuss any of this. And it's weirder still, because hasn't that kind of been what he's known for? Like being this freewheeling guy who, you know, he makes deals for Democrats. I mean, that's kind of what he was known for when he was in the Senate. Oh, it's, you know, Biden's this, you know, wheeler dealer. He's going around, he's making these deals, he's getting people to. It's weird because that was kind of like one of the things that he was known for. He's not only has he not been in a room, not been in a room with Kevin McCarthy, but, and I did one more glance over on my notes. He hasn't even been involved in the negotiations for this.
True.
Have you seen anything where he's been involved in any of the, this is his budget.
The only thing I've actually seen, and then I think I saw this yesterday too, was Steve Scalise coming out and saying, look, Biden, you have to come off the sidelines here, man. You have to come off the sidelines and start with these negotiations.
So he's not getting into a room to talk with Kevin McCarthy. He's not involved in the negotiations at all whatsoever. Is it a possibility that they're just, you've seen him make speeches. Are they worried because then you see really how far off he is? How, because he does not have that. What's lacking in this administration is something that I've seen in every other administration. A relationship with that Speaker of the House, the relationship with the, you know, Senate party leaders, the involvement in different negotiations. Like Barack Obama had a relationship with John Boehner. You know, Trump had his relationship with Pelosi. I mean, they had to work with these people and they had to have this relationship. And you don't see that with this president. You don't see him making calls. You don't see him pushing his party to make any kind of compromises or concessions. And that you would, and if he were, they would be leaking that as a way to demonstrate, here's Biden taking charge of his party and here's Biden trying to make this work. They would be leaking that if he was doing it, which he's not. So he's like sequestered away from all of this behind a bunch of aides. And they only bring him out and they like basically lead him when he does these, you know, speeches or public events. And when he actually had a conversation with the Tennessee Three, they immediately got the press out and shut the doors. They immediately, when the South Korean leader was here, they immediately got the press, shut the doors again. Is it because they're trying to hide how far gone he is in terms of, you know, his cognitive function? I mean, I think it's a legitimate question to ask. I've never seen an administration where the president wasn't involved directly in trying to negotiate and finalize a budget. It is weird. What the hell is he there for? He's going back to Delaware. I mean, where is this? When does he call a lid? He calls a lid like this afternoon. Has he already called it?
11 a.m. or something.
Yeah. He's already back in Delaware, I think. Or heading back to Delaware. He's going to be in Delaware for the whole weekend. You're about to hit a debt ceiling? And you're calling a lid and you're going back to Delaware when everybody's hashing it out? You're the party leader. That's your job. I mean, I remember even Barack Obama was like calling up John Boehner and he was inviting party leaders to the White House and doing all this stuff. And I mean, regardless if you like him or not, every other president, Republican or Democrat, that's what they've done. He's not doing any of this. He's back. He's going home to Delaware. This is wild. It's like, are they trying to hide his cognitive decline? That's the only thing I can think of. Why else would they not allow him to sit down and talk to Kevin McCarthy? Or why would he not be making phone calls to try to get concessions or, you know, finalize something unless he can't? Because like I said, you know that he would be doing it. If he was doing it, you would know because they would be leaking it. They would have it like, oh, well, here's Biden leading his party and he's here he is hosting, you know, so-and-so for lunch at the White House so that they can talk about concessions for the debt ceiling, et cetera, et cetera. That's what they did with every other president. They're not with him. Not at all. No, instead, they've been focusing on, I think they're trying to keep everybody distracted with a lot of the SCOTUS stuff. With Clarence Thomas, and they're so mad about Clarence Thomas. We mentioned that a little bit yesterday. Well, here's a little, so this is from Luke Roziak. Luke Roziak had this piece. It says that Sonia Sotomayor took $3 million from a book publisher and didn't recuse from its cases. Okay. Says he writes that Random House was her main source of earned income, but she voted on a key decision where Random House stood to lose money, even as a similarly positioned colleague recused. So this was a case that involved multiple copyright infringements, and it involved Random House. And despite having been, she got like millions, I guess, for her books. It, according to the records, the public records, it was the largest source of her income. In 2010, she got a $1.2 million book advance from Knopf Doubleday. That's a subsidiary. In 2012, she had two advance payments. That was about $2 million. And there was a case against the publisher. It was Aaron Greenspan versus Random House. Breyer recused himself because he had taken money from the publisher. He was in the same position. He had taken money from the publisher and he recused himself from that case. She did not. And the case was about how Greenspan was a Harvard classmate of Mark Zuckerberg's. He wrote a book about the founding of Facebook and contended that Random House rejected his book proposal and then awarded the deal to another author who copied his book and eventually turned it into the movie The Social Network. Publishers do this kind of stuff sometimes. They really do. And so in 2017, she got payments for this, etc. There were a couple of cases, one in each time there was a similarly positioned justice that had recused themselves and she did not. So that kind of brings up a question, especially since they've been going on and on about Clarence Thomas. And Clarence Thomas's case, I don't see that her. I mean, I would still need to, because I think that's like a very serious thing when you're telling, when you're having, you know, Supreme Court justices recuse themselves. But this, they're saying that she at least disclosed her payments. Clarence Thomas had some personal gifts and travel arrangements. But the disclosure rules, though, from what I understand, he's not required to disclose like travel arrangements or things like this. And this was, I mean, how long ago was it? It was like 15, almost 20 years ago when he would have disclosed these. Now they have a practice that's still, it's still not legally binding, but they just do it. They just disclose everything anyway. But he didn't have to do that, number one. And there wasn't a conflict of interest because he wasn't Clarence Thomas. And this is about all this stuff from Harlan Crowe, this, you know, donor, etc. He wasn't hearing a case in which Crowe was involved in. Now, that would have been actually a conflict of interest. So that isn't really analogous to the Sotomayor case. But this is what happens when the left gets over their skis. Like, it was ProPublica. And they kept saying, oh, Clarence Thomas, like, for instance, ProPublica said that Clarence Thomas had a child in private school and Harlan Crowe paid the tuition. Actually, it was his grandnephew. It wasn't his kid. Clarence Thomas' kids are grown. What are you talking about? I just, this is weird. It's a weird, that's not even comparable. But that's what happens when the left gets over their skis like this. We have more in store. I got to play. So we have this video of Sheldon Whitehouse, White Club, I should say,
yeah,
getting told. The Nashville Manifesto, they're not releasing it because they're getting sued for not releasing it. We're going to talk about that. We got headlines on the way. I know. We'll talk about it. All of this and more.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Okay, so, oh my gosh, the Barbie movie? They're being accused. This is the Margot Robbie, Ryan Gosling thing. Apparently, they're being accused of featuring homeless people in the background as background actors and not paying them. Yeah.
Homeless.
It was at the Tonka State Park in Santa Monica. They said normally production units might pay like $300 to $1,500 individuals or homeless people, but they said they did not do it. And they just use them in the movie as background actors. I don't know. That sounds so bad. Also, I had to get this headline in. There's a wolf off. Colorado and Wyoming are fighting over wolves, and it is the funniest thing. So I don't know if you've like seen. This is so funny. So apparently, Wyoming's governor told Colorado, no wolves for you. They said that in the statement, the governor, Mark Gordon, said, quote, Wyoming is opposed to sending Wyoming wolves to Colorado because we carefully and scientifically manage our wolf population. So they're not having it. They threw a lot of shade at Colorado. They said, no, you can't have any of our Wyoming wolves. And then he basically said, not verbatim, that they sucked and that the wolves would want to come back to Wyoming because Colorado sucks. I'm just saying that that's what the statement is. It's so funny to read this. I love bureaucratic fights. They're so great. A Minnesota state senator made a shirtless appearance to vote via Zoom. Now, in his defense, Senator Calvin Baer of East Bethel is a truck driver, and he was working till 4 in the morning, and that's why. But the thing that made it the best was the background was the Schoolhouse Rock I'm Just a Bill character. And he shows up shirtless with his blanket, and you could, God love him. He was, you know, he just was there. He worked till 5 a.m. And so he had like 2 hours of sleep. He's a truck driver. That's his job. He was doing his job, right? He was taking care of his family, cut him a break. He showed up as, hey, if he voted Republican, I don't care. All right, we got a lot more on the way, including Switzerland wants kids to eat more insects and less chocolate. No. Sounds horrible. Stay with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Can I ask you a question? You don't have to answer. It's personal. I'm not speaking of you, but more in general of ladies. When they go to the ladies' room and powder their noses, is there actually nose powdering going on?
Sometimes.
Ooh. I like the sound of that.
See, this is why we're friends.
Most of the time it's lipstick.
Do pillow fights ever break out? You don't have to.
Not in the bed.
Okay, not in the bed.
I love it. See, like, this stuff comes out, and it just makes, like, you like him more, right? Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Always good to be with you. Bottom of our third hour. I can't tell you, well, how many times, like, we've been in the makeup room or in, I mean, really anywhere, and you'll say stuff like that. And that's like, isn't that like a long-running joke? No one's offended over that stuff. No one's offended over it. It's funny. And I'm always like, sometimes. And then if people are like, oh, are there pillow fights? Only if there's a pillow dispenser. Or if Mike Lindell pops up, you know, like in that commercial where he's in the mirror. By the way, that's like the premise of Candyman, the movie. I don't mean to derail, but can we just talk about this for a second? Is he getting like ideas for commercials from horror films? Which would kind of be amazing. I just got to say, because Candyman, if you are unfamiliar, they did a remake of it that's not very good. The original is terrifying. But it has to do, like, if the, it's based on this whole thing, like, if you go in the bathroom and you say, you know, Candyman three times in the dark, like, it, somebody, a monster appears beside you and kills you or something. And there's been, like, so many variants of this, right? Like, different things. And that was the movie. So in the MyPillow, like, one of the MyPillow commercials, these people are, like, this dude's, like, brushing his teeth, right? He's, you know, doing his morning routine, his morning toilette. And all of a sudden, Mike Lindell's in the mirror, like a ghost. And he's like, hey, how's your pillow? That's kind of terrifying, right? Like, nobody stops and goes, wait a minute, why are you in the mirror? This is like Candyman. I didn't. So is that, did they say like Mike Lindell's name three times and then he popped up? Like, I don't know. I'm just curious. Anyway, long story short, only if, you know, there's like a pillow dispenser or if you go in the bathroom and say Mike Lindell's name in the mirror three times, then he appears and gives you a pillow. For suffocating you. I'm kidding. No, he just, that's, it's all a joke. I see stuff like this and I like him more. That's funny. Right. It's funny. Why does Media Matters think that this is, I mean, he's not Jeffrey Toobin. He didn't Toobin it. Oh. Just almost vomited. It's always the ugly dudes too. Like the Jeffrey Toobin thing. Yeah. Always ugly. I'm not saying that I want to see it either way, but it's always the ugly dudes. Oh my gosh. So he was, like, really quickly. Why? Okay. Before we play this audio, how did they get on this topic of revisiting what happened with him?
Honestly, I don't want to know.
Just play it.
And what exactly happened? Was it just, you just left open the screen?
Oh my gosh!
You know, I'd rather not go into the grisly details. The only thing I'll say about it is I didn't know other people were on the Zoom call, were watching. I mean, this was not an intentional
act. Oh, so that makes it way better.
On my part. Other than that, I'd rather not go into the details. But I mean, that to me, for some reason, that is important to get out there.
Golly. I can't. Yeah, he's like, I'd rather not go into grisly details. So gross. It's so gross. Anyway, can you imagine? Like, did Media Matters say anything about Toobin? I don't think they did. I don't think they said a singular word about Jeffrey Toobin. But they're all upset over, oh, Tucker Carlson said yummy. And? Oh my gosh. And? All right, so I have some other things I want to make sure that we're getting into. All right, first off, I'm sure you saw, as it relates to the Nashville killer, the militant trans activist who went and shot up a Christian school. So originally, the police were going to release the manifesto. And I will have everyone remember that in the messages and everything that were publicized and distributed and according to accounts from the killers, like, I don't want to say friends, like associates, because they acted like they weren't friends, really. The killer who was a female and wanted to be a male, she was telling everyone that she was going to leave evidence behind so that there would be no doubt as to what her, like, why she was doing what she was doing. That was like some of her final messages to people. So keep that in mind. So the Nashville police, they said they were going to review the manifesto before they released it. And then they never released it. And a bunch of people, a bunch of city residents began filing requests for the manifesto because it's public record. It is not in any way bad to, you know, it's not going to impact the case to release it or anything like that. And there is compelling public interest to release it. And then they refused. They wouldn't do it. They said, no, we're not going to release it. So they sued. People sued to make the Nashville police release the manifesto. So then the Nashville police came out and they said, yeah, we're not going to release the manifesto because we're being sued for not releasing the manifesto. We can't release stuff with ongoing lawsuits, ongoing litigation. That's literally what they said. Yeah, we can't release things because of ongoing that are involved involved in litigation. So we can't. They're being sued for not releasing the manifesto. And so, no, we can't release the manifesto because we're being sued for not releasing the manifesto. And we just don't release we don't release things related to ongoing litigation.
How is that true?
They could what they call moot the suit by just releasing the manifesto. But they won't do it. Wonder why they won't do it, though. You know, I really wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt. Now that's gone. Right? Remember, how nice was I in the beginning? I was so nice. And you guys know, I was very impressed with their reaction, etc. And I thought, oh, they're not playing around. They're going to release this. No, they're playing around. So that was the excuse that they gave. That they were, and it is, there is compelling public interest in releasing this. I want to know, what were the reasons? You have militant gun control activists shooting up banks and militant trans activists shooting up Christian schools. And in the meantime, you know, Joe Biden only talked to the Tennessee Three. And I thought that was kind of dumb because he ignored the Christian families of the victims, as though Democrats don't say that they're Christian and they don't wear cross necklaces and they don't go to church. I mean, really? So they're not, I don't know what's going to, they could release this suit. I don't know how long this is going to take, but that's why it hasn't been released. They said that, well, no, we're being sued for not releasing the manifesto. Because we're being sued for not releasing the manifesto, we can't release the manifesto because we're being sued for not releasing the manifesto. We can't release stuff that's ongoing litigation. I feel it's like Bill Murray wrote it. I don't know, man. I really don't even know. But that's actually what happened. Okay, so there's a new protected class. Oh, I know.
Am I in it?
No, they're not. It's called transableism. Oh, yes. It's, I've seen only bits and pieces of this, but now apparently it's becoming a really big thing. So this dude in Norway, it wasn't enough for him to try to appropriate the female sex. No. He wanted to be a very specific type of person who appropriates a female. He wanted to be a particular kind of trans person. This man didn't just want to be a woman. He wanted to be a disabled woman. Hands to sky. This is the actual story. He's on Twitter and everything. He wanted to literally, he's 53 years old. He said that he always wished to be born as a woman paralyzed from the waist down. I am not making this up. I mean, he's not, but that's what. And so he spends most days in a wheelchair by choice, even though he's never actually had a disability. And he says he hasn't had the surgery because it's expensive. Like, what do you mean? He says he fantasizes about being in a car accident to realize his dream of being paraplegic. I am not making this up. I swear to you. He says he also participates in extreme sports like skiing aggressively when not in his wheelchair. I am not. There's a whole interview with him and everything. It's all in Norwegian, so I can't understand any of it. But oh, man. So that's literally, then there was a woman, did you see this? The woman who made herself blind. She was a transabled woman named Jewel who literally went blind on purpose. She poured drain cleaner in her eyes and found a psychologist willing to help her with the process.
Oh, it's not mental illness at all.
I mean, she gave drain cleaner to her therapist who put droplets of the chemicals in her eyes.
What?
He then waited by her side for 30 minutes to ensure she was blind and then rushed her to the hospital where the doctors fought to save her vision.
That's legal?
Well, isn't, I mean, I, dude, I can't even believe this. This is the wildest stuff. They call it body integrity identity disorder, or BID. We call it nuts.
Yeah, it's a mental illness.
Oh my gosh. They had a website. Undercover DC noted that they even had a website where they called people who didn't like go all the way. They called them wannabes, pretenders, and devotees. Wannabes and pretenders. Oh my gosh. So I just can't. This is one of the wildest things I've ever seen, but this is apparently like an actual thing. As we here in the United States are looking at chemical castration of kids and mutilation that they call gender affirming surgeries. I mean, we're creating Frankenbits to go along with body dysmorphia. I have no words. I just have no words. So he was on this guy, his name's Jorund. He calls himself Jorund Victoria Almi. He was on Norwegian television, and that's what he said, that he had always wanted to be a disabled woman, particularly. Now, how in the world is this not offensive appropriation? I mean, I've never seen anything like this. So now, in addition to just like having transgender, now you have transabled. Now, and then don't forget the guy, who was the guy who was in Canada who wanted to be a different age? Mm-hmm. What was he calling that? Like trans age, but.
Yeah, it was.
And he's like a 60-something year old dude dressing like a little girl. So it wasn't enough for him to identify as a woman. He wanted to be a little minor child girl. These people need help, not to be made easier in this. They need help, actual help. I mean, I just can't. How far does this go? For real, like for real, how far does this go? I don't get it. Like, at what point do you draw the line? Pathological empathy. I don't know how else to describe it. You see someone who wants to hurt themselves and your first thought is, let me help you, because it's mean if I don't help you hurt yourself. That's like a masochist kind of remark. I just don't understand that. Man, we need Jesus and Smod. Maybe at the same time, maybe Smod comes first. I don't know. And then Jesus can come pick us all up out of the atmosphere. I don't know. I'm just saying. Good heavens. But that's what we're dealing with here. So where's the line drawn? Big question. Did I freak everybody out enough here towards the end of the broadcast? But wait, there's more. No.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all, live or on demand. The Dana Show.
Percent of global emissions.
Yeah, but if you could answer my question, if we spend $50 trillion to become carbon neutral in the United States of America by 2050, you're the Deputy Secretary of Energy. Give me your estimate of how much that is going to reduce world temperatures.
So first of all, it's a net cost. It's what benefits we're having from getting our act together and reducing all of those climate benefits.
Let me ask again. Maybe I'm not being clear. If we spent $50 trillion to become carbon neutral by 2050 in the United States of America, how much is that going to reduce world temperatures?
This is a global problem. So we need to reduce our emissions and we need to do everything we can.
How much, if we do our part, is it going to reduce world temperatures?
So we're 13% of global emissions.
You don't know, do you? You don't know, do you?
You can do the math. We need to.
You don't know, do you, Mr. Secretary?
So we're 13% of global
emissions. If you know, why won't you tell me?
If we went to zero, that would be 13%.
You don't know, do you? You just want us to spend $50 trillion. And you don't have the slightest idea whether it's going to reduce world temperatures. Now, I'm all for carbon neutrality, but you're the deputy secretary of the Department of Energy, and you're advocating we spend trillions of dollars to seek carbon neutrality, and you can't, and this isn't your money and my money, it's taxpayer money, and you can't tell me how much it's going to lower world temperatures? Or you won't tell me? You know, but you won't?
In my heart of hearts, there is no way the world gets its act together on climate change unless the U.S. leads.
Tell me how much it's going to reduce. Can't tell
this me. This is so great. I love Senator Kennedy. We want him on the show, but I think he doesn't like me. And I don't know why. It hurts my heart. I'm going to assume that until he comes on and says otherwise. All right, today in Stupidity, Kane.
Oh, it is KJP. This is her saying those COVID vaccines, man, they're so effective.
I want to be very mindful. I hear your questions about vaccines. I want the American people to know that the COVID vaccines remain highly effective to reduce the risk of serious illness.
Oh, no, they don't.
They
nice try, though.
They don't.
Has she ever told the truth?
No.
I
don't know her.
It's a tough question.
Yeah, never have. Tomorrow's Friday, guys. So we made it through the week, right? Make sure you sign up for Chapter and Verse over at Substack. Find us on Facebook and YouTube. Like and subscribe. And we'll be back with you tomorrow.